Welcome, friends of the Libra Solutions Network. My name is Gabriel, and I run this digital autonomy advocacy multimedia project. Today is July 31st, 2025, and I am providing the summer recap. It's been a while since I've been producing these monthly recaps, especially in video form. I'm excited to get back into giving regular video overviews of what's been going on, especially because things are getting more exciting. I do think a good place to start is the website, because I have made a couple of changes, small, simple changes, that I think really do add up to quite a bit. One of the first things I would notice, but maybe other people won't, is that there are actually Tor and I2P links for the hidden service versions of the website. So this means that even in an age where you have to show your ID to access even the most simplest of websites, at least now there will be hidden service versions that may be more resilient to these kinds of changes. I'd like to do a demonstration of the new vanity address for the Libra Solutions Network, which is at lsnonion.therestoftheaddress.onion. And yeah, it is the same website, just loaded over the Tor browser or whatever, you know, for instance, Brave has Tor built in. And the advantage of this is fundamentally that domains can't be seized over the Tor network. Yes, they can hack your server and then eventually seize your domain. But in general, this is a much more resilient way of accessing this and other websites. I think as the internet censorship is accelerating, it's going to be very important to at least understand how to use the Tor browser, how to access hidden services, and if you're a content creator, how to mirror your site onto the dark web. I think that's going to be a very important thing moving forward. But of course, I also have an I2P hidden service because I'm really not dogmatic about which darknet we use. It's just those two are the most popular I've seen people use. But there are many other options. There's Yggdrasil, there's Reticulum, there's Freenet, Hyphenet, there's many different options out there. These are just the two I'm currently mirroring to, and I am looking forward to thinking of new ways to manage these systems a little bit better. Of course, while I haven't been doing these regular monthly recaps, I still have been working on the Libra Solutions Network. We have a couple of interviews lately. We have some written content as usual. And I did really like the piece about cool concepts that deserve attention. I do think ZeroNet honestly is something more people should be inspired by based off an ambitious attempt to rebuild the web. And there are many other systems out there like Pyrobox that are absolutely worth considering, as well as Gun, which I personally wish I had spent more time playing around with because it is an intriguing concept. On a more bureaucratic side of things, I have joined White Rose Intelligence as their digital liberty advisor. This is really just adding an official status to the work I've already been doing to help Liam Sturgis, the founder of White Rose Intelligence. I mean, I'm not thrilled of any photo of myself, but this is a nice press release you can read about what we intend to do together. The long story short of it is that we have found what he's working on is broader scope than what I want to do with this project. The Libra Solutions Network is primarily focused on tech freedom and what we can kind of do to make actionable steps to reclaim digital autonomy and what can be done either individually or as collectively to address those issues. White Rose Intelligence is more about the bigger picture. The White Rose Intelligence is open source research in defense of liberty. And so because of it has a broader scope, I think tech freedom issues are still a very important part of the picture. And I'm glad I'm given this opportunity to really give a voice to the technical freedom dimension in the broader human rights context. And I think that's something that really does need to be focused on quite a bit because none of these fights are completely siloed away. The broader human rights fight is very intertwined with the digital liberty side of things. And so I'm excited for this opportunity to really bring both into focus, even if the broader fight is outside of scope for the Libra Solutions Network. It's great to be working on this kinds of project. I also appeared on Actionable Truths and Actions to discuss Odyssey's new monetization model. There's been a lot of hype about Odyssey, and they haven't, to my knowledge, at least yet launched Portal, which is the thing they have partnered with the Independent Media Alliance, supposedly to solve free speech and censorship online. I mean, call me a little bit skeptical, but there is a lot going on right now that makes it a very difficult environment to navigate. And so Michael and I had a great conversation where we tried to delve into the details of what we know about Odyssey's monetization model and some of the red flags that we've kind of identified in that discussion. Next up, I just want to highlight some of the interviews I've done lately. For instance, at the start of this year, I was on the Corbett Report to discuss how to really resist digital ID. I also had him on my digital autonomy series to talk about digital autonomy and open source intelligence. We touch on AI use, we touch on the censorship, we touched on the deplatforming. There's a lot of important aspects of this discussion, and I hope there will be more discussions moving forward. Of course, I did have that chat with Michael about Odyssey's monetization model. Also, I was given the opportunity to talk with the people from Simplified Privacy. I spoke with Shadow about his Simplified Privacy project, where he does have a lot of educational material on some of these topics. And so it was kind of nice to be able to have the opportunity to critically evaluate one. And I thought it was a great conversation. We talked about the broader fight of trying to put decentralization into practice. And it was a good chat to really learn from somebody who's trying to run this as a business. And it was great to have a conversation with somebody who's at least trying to do that. And more recently, I had an excellent chat with Anti Moonboy to talk about Monero and really just the broader cryptocurrency ecosystem. And I do think the Moonboys are a problem. And so it was really nice to talk to Anti Moonboy about cryptocurrency in general, but especially Monero. And I thought it was a great conversation overall. Now, the other thing is I'm actually making big progress on my personal programming project, because for me, it's been really important to not just talk about these technical topics. I'm realizing there are things I want to put into practice. And so a big part of this is that I think an achievable project I can actually make happen is a pro decentralization RSS reader. Now that sounds a little redundant because RSS is already decentralized. But one of the pain points I've had with many RSS readers is that many RSS readers do not actually provide the ability to discover new content. Yes, you can open a link, you can check if it has an RSS feed, and if it does, you can add it. But like, I think really, it's not a complicated thing to kind of seamlessly integrate that step into the software itself. And so that was kind of the inspiration for this project. And I have many ambitious plans about what this system can actually do to really push the envelope on decentralization. I think there are many things an RSS reader can provide as a desktop application that would have so many advantages over a regular browser or, you know, even some of the RSS readers out there. Not to throw shade on any, I use Fresh RSS and I really like it. I love Casts on, you know, the KDE desktop environment, and AntennaPod is my favorite Android app, period. And so it's really, I think there is a niche that I can contribute to this space, and I think it's a great opportunity for me to upgrade my skills. And so everybody who's been supporting me here at the Liber Solutions Network is directly responsible for me really trying to push the envelope here and make something actually real. So I'm going to run the new version of this project. There's Chicago running. I didn't realize I had my website open, but that's the idea. So this is the current state of it. And just to prove that it actually does load things and puts it in the database, I'm going to wipe the database first. And so I have this little dev panel for myself just as a convenient way to get this going. And so it is a little laggy. There are a bunch of performance changes I need to make. But for instance, you can actually add any feed here. So I don't know who we want to add on the first place, but I'll do. And I had an interview with Andy Moonboy lately, so that's why I'm thinking of him. So the important thing is here is I'm just showing an arbitrary link. This is off the top of my head. I didn't go into this planning it. And you add the feed. So it clears the input feed. And so you can put it here and you can go back. And then you have a button. You can browse all of them. Again, this needs a lot of overhaul as far as visuals are concerned, but I'm mostly interested about getting things working. So for instance here, you can see Anti Noobs Boy News, Pig Butchering, the links, all of this is displayed in Markdown because anything that can be converted to Markdown is. But if we go back and we add, let's just say Gabe.rocks and Liber Solutions, because I want to show some of the placeholder elements. Let's go back here. It'll lag because it gets annoyed when I do database updates. So let's do game.rocks. So I have a post here that I'm actually going to move over so you can see what I'm talking about here. So one of the things I've been kind of working on here is that there's a lot that needs to happen with this. So for instance, this 200-pound loss, I created a difference between what's displaying here and what's on the RSS feed. So the RSS feed really starts here, and you'll notice I'm pulling the title, I'm pulling the media from the actual RSS feed. So for instance, I have the date.mp4 here, so that way the audio player widget will be able to play, you know, podcasts, and I think that's really handy. And then yes, everything that can be converted to Markdown is, but then I also have this video element here that I think would be really handy to actually display as a video, because why not? I think it's great that these features exist. And so that was the big milestone lately. I wanted to know that it was possible, but I think it can absolutely be a game changer, because a lot of these decentralization and media features, I think, will actually breathe new life into the independent web. And I really think that's what we need. I think we need a real bulwark against internet censorship. And I think that's about building tools that will actually help people. Speaking of game changers, I am now on XMR chat. So now people can super tip me Monero, and I can do it in the next video update or the next show or whatever I produce. And hey, if you want to be the first person to send me a tip through XMR chat, absolutely check it out here. It's xmrchat.com/LSN for the Liber Solutions Network. And yeah, by all means, leave me a tip and I will include it in the next article, the next video, whatever it is. But what I love about XMR chat is you can actually host it yourself. It's actually an open source project that you can explore, that you can set up. Which means even if they deplatform you, which I don't think they really have a reason to, but this is something you could run as part of your own tech stack. You have your own independent digital infrastructure. You can run this same system to have the same kind of setup with, say, you know, you and a community of other people. And I think that's really cool. I think this is the kind of model we need to consider, where we need to build tools that change the game, not just simply migrate to a new website. And I think this is an excellent example of what can be done to transform things moving forward. Now, lastly, on a personal note, I do want to share that I have lost over 200 pounds over the last year and a bit. Weight has been a big part of my personal struggle for quite some time, and it's only lately things have kind of started falling into place. I really do need to say that, like, a lot of it was a hard fight, where it's like I had been working on this for many years. It's really only as things started to fall into place, the numbers really started piling up. And so it's been a very tough journey, and it's been kind of in the background of all the work I do here. And I'm just glad that it's working and that things are going well. And so I did want to share this milestone here, because it's a big one. You know, I'm sure anybody who's familiar with my content is going to like notice a difference as far as how I looked from a year ago. I mean, I certainly notice the change, but yeah, it's been a big, hard-won victory. And unfortunately, it has kind of come at the cost of a lot of the things I would like to do at the Liber Solutions Network. There are many things I would have liked to have accomplished over the last year that unfortunately did get sidetracked for this victory. But I am hoping that as I become more capable in the physical world, my digital activism will only be enhanced by this victory. And so I do think this victory is worth celebrating. I do still have quite a ways to go, but I really need people to know that any bit of encouragement, whether it's my written content or whether it's about the weight loss journey, which I do provide updates for on my personal blog, as well as a Substack, Microdosing Failure. Anyone who's been here along the way and saying something nice or giving feedback, it really has meant a lot to me. And it's come in so many different ways. I have gotten a lot of nice emails of people saying, hey, Gabriel, you know, I see what you're doing. I like what you're doing. And I find it fascinating that many of the kind comments I've gotten about my weight loss journey have come from the darknets. Ooh, the scary deep web, you know. I publish my hidden services and people have found it on I2P, you know, one of the more obscure darknets out there. People will still, you know, send me an email and say, hey, you know, great job on the weight loss. And to me, that's really been what's so gratifying about tying everything I've been doing together, is I've been learning so much and I've been seeing that there is still a humanity in the virtual world that I think is sacred, and we should really nurture and protect that. And so on a personal note, things are going very well on this front, and I'm so happy to share my journey, and you can check out my health blog posts about these things, the video updates I've done. It means so much to me that I've been given the opportunity to take this on, and I'm hoping that people will continue to find hope and inspiration from it, because I've gotten a lot of nice comments from people in this journey, and it is really quite an adventure. It has changed how I see many different things, but it is a great journey to be on. And so next up, on a less personal note, I have news coming up. And to start off with the news, I am actually starting with a story that touched me personally, actually, because I am a Corbett Report subscriber and member who signed up in the described time. I was actually a victim of this particular data leak at the Corbett Report, which they did a great job at covering and being transparent about and going into detail about really just the issue as a whole. A short summary of the issue is that the plugin GiveWP for WordPress is a WordPress plugin that had a security vulnerability that was patched pretty quickly, but there are some concerns about the developer's attitude being quite flippant when people tried bringing it to their attention. I really do applaud Corbett Report for the coverage and the detail they gave. The really great highlight of this situation was the fact that because people were using disposable email addresses, i.e. email aliases for specific websites and not anywhere else, both the Corbett Report and Pi-hole communities were able to identify the issue quickly and at least try to get it addressed. And so it is really valuable that people are actually using these tools, and it is actually changing the game. The Pi-hole community has their own write-up about this issue where they go into detail about how the developers handled the issue and how they acted in the GitHub repository. It's honestly quite disappointing, and I'll let Troy Hunt cover it because he's the guy who runs Have I Been Pwned, which is a very valuable website where you type in your email address, and if there are any known breaches, the website will report that your email has been found in this breach, which may also include other information because he collects other information about those breaches. And so if it has, say, more than just your email address, which will make you a target for spam, because it's a WordPress plugin that will affect many websites, I don't expect Have I Been Pwned to have the totality of all the breaches related to this security incident, which is a great reminder that while Have I Been Pwned is an amazing resource that really people should be aware of and using, the fact of the matter is that it is not the totality of all the information out there. One should not have a false sense of security just because their email or phone number or whatever piece of information is not in Have I Been Pwned. That is not representative of the totality of information that is seized out there. It is quite disappointing to see how they addressed it in the comments here. The absolutely flippant and dismissive attitude is absolutely abhorrent. And it's really just the kicker at the end here where it says, "Further confronting comments or issues will be deleted, not out of spite or anger, but a desire to move on to bigger and better things. Thank you." Man, that's just enraging. Like, I find it straight up, like, offensive. I'll use the O word. I do think it's offensive, considering this is a big deal. You know, if you are building something that is a building block that other people are using, you know, I'm not going to say you can't do ever make a mistake. You know, we all make mistakes. We all have, you know, problems that arise, and we deal with them the best we can. It's this kind of attitude as if none of this matters. I mean, another developer even said something along the lines of, oh, there hasn't been any real world impact, but it's like, it depends on what your definition of real world impact is, I guess. And it's a great reminder that it is really important to consider what are the attitudes of the people who are building the tools you care about. When you're relying on a tool, it is important that the fine details matter. Moving on, speaking of the fine details mattering quite a bit, the EU Age Verification app has an issue where it relies on attestation from the Google Play Integrity API or Apple's app attestation. What this means is that the age verification app, the system that's supposed to keep everybody safe, requires a certain level of invasive surveillance on your device so they can ask a server whether you're allowed to actually use it. for many people who are, let's just say, trying to straddle the line on using it in circumstances where they don't mind age verification and instead of refusing it outright, this creates a problem. Because if you're using Graphene OS or some other device that is secured from, you know, these big tech providers, this EU age verification app will not work unless you opt into those other big tech systems. So this creates a real dependency problem where it is not sufficient that the app itself may be perfectly designed, maybe it's perfectly private, if it doesn't matter if you still introduce a dependency on hostile actors. And I'm happy to call big tech a hostile actor in this space. And so this is something even I wrote a piece talking about the age verification problem and about how they're not going to be able to solve it just at the platform level. They are going to migrate into requiring stuff on your devices. And it seems like we're already there. It seems like we are already introducing requirements, which means that means if you have a dumb phone, for example, you won't be able to age verify if it doesn't have access to these attestation systems. It is worth reading the broader discussion. They moved it to a different discussion. There is a lot of back and forth here. Truthfully, would I really think that the EU Identity Project is the best place to hash these ideas out? Maybe not, but hey, it's a place where the conversation is taking place. And of course, I'll also link to the actual age verification Android wallet. And the fact of the matter is that the scope creep is already here. This isn't some hypothetical about, oh, maybe it will be worse in the future. They are already creating requirements to engage with systems people are already trying to extract their lives from, successfully or not. And so these hardwired dependency problems are a serious issue, whether people want to comply or not. I mean, I don't recommend giving into these age verification schemes, but people may have to for their workplace. And so now that creates more friction for people who would like to disconnect, but probably can't in many ways. So this is an important space to watch, and I hope people really do push back in whatever ways they can, but more important, understand the fine details of how this is weaponized against people. On a similar note, if you're interested in fighting back, I really like this post by Battle Penguin. He does a lot of interesting posts on technology, and he talks about having a sticker on your driver's license saying don't scan it. If they have to check your driver's license at a restaurant or whatever to buy alcohol or some other thing, they shouldn't need to scan it. You should be allowed to show your ID that's real and, you know, whatever, and them not have to like put it in their database and track every transaction you make. I think this is a good line to draw about how you want to do this. And I think it's an important question to really consider. How much pushback is there within the options that are available? It's very important to kind of test the boundaries where you can. Next up, we have devices lacking standard security, privacy patches, and protections aren't private by Graphene OS. This is a response to something published by iFixit, which is talking about why you should consider the Fairphone 6 as your next phone. Of course, the devil is always in the details. There are some real concerns Graphene OS raises about the Fairphone because it uses EOS, and there are many other de-Googled equivalents. And basically, it kind of boils down to Graphene OS has the stance they do because there are hardware requirements for certain security features that they see are essential to really providing protection on a device. I can understand somebody trying to make a judgment call of like, well, getting away from Google is better than nothing, so why not? But the challenge with Google being so integrated with the Android ecosystem is that there is kind of a question of what about updates? What about patches? Because if you're not getting security updates on your device because it's trying to be more independent, which is in theory a good thing, the problem is then you have a device that is vulnerable because the exploits to attack it are well known. Instead of something that's been fixed and everybody's already dealt with it, there seems to be some problems with some of these alternative Android flavors where they have trouble getting the updates at a acceptable rate. And that creates problems. It does. It's not a trivial issue to solve. And I don't think this necessarily means we should throw EOS and some of these other Android alternatives out the window. I think we should spend more time trying to think of how do we support these projects to get updates properly. And I do think the band-aid that probably does need to be ripped off at some point is maybe the, you know, independent tech community should build our own mobile operating system. That's no small task. That's a big ask. It's going to require a lot of independent expertise. It's going to require a lot of support from a broader community of people who care about this kind of thing. And I'm really optimistic about Graphene OS kind of growing into that over time, because they've got, you know, a lot of really detailed ideas about what are the boundaries that we should care about. And so I do really think it's worth considering, what is the future of this direction? Are we going to be dependent on Android and Google forever? There's an antitrust case in the works that may actually make that an untenable position. So I'm glad there are people who are forward thinking about these issues, but I really just want to bring to your attention that there really are fine details when it comes to, is my device really secure, even if I am trying to be more private by getting away from Google. Next up, another piece that may seem incredibly controversial. The future is not self-hosted. And I actually really like this post because it does a great job at articulating some of the fine points with really reclaiming digital independence. It's not simple. It does take time. It does take work. One person can do it for themselves, and if they're relatively tech savvy, it works pretty well. The challenge that this post kind of arises is that it doesn't scale very well. We are not really ever going to get to a point where every person is able to self-host in the way that it currently functions, because there are time barriers, there are technical barriers, there are resource barriers. Being able to have a small, inexpensive computer to be your home server is great, but then what if you want more storage? What if you need to store a lot of media files? There are many personal edge cases that make solving these problems non-trivial. And so the piece argues here that community-centered hosting is fundamentally the practical direction forward. We do seriously need to consider what are the other alternatives out there, because the goal, as I see it, as technically minded people, is that we do need to consider what we're doing to be efficient. Like, if one person is just spending all their time being the computer person, that should be able to transfer to other people having digital independence and digital autonomy. I think there are two major strategies that can be done to really tackle this. One, the first thing is that community-centered, you know, collaboration, you pool resources, you use those resources together, you have some simple management system. As long as you trust each other, everything's fine there. As long as you are choosing to come together and you're not being forced to be dependent on some guy's system, you know, that's a win. That's worth, you know, seriously considering. And there are many ways, even with current systems, you can save time by pooling resources. And I think that is fundamentally the answer. It's really important to consider what are the real lines of trust we want to work on so that self-hosting is, or at least independent digital infrastructure, is more accessible to people in general. The other thing I think is a useful kind of like thought I had about this post was the fact that a lot of these problems have to do with the way software is currently designed. Software is currently designed under this client-server model, and peer-to-peer applications are kind of the exception rather than the rule. And so I think if we had some creativity, if we had some novel approaches to certain specific problems, I think expanding the types of peer-to-peer applications that exist could solve some of the technical challenges when it comes to self-hosting. This is a bigger discussion. This probably deserves its own post. But I'm just pointing out as an idea here that maybe the problem is not necessarily that self-hosting itself is too hard. Maybe the problem is the way we have most software written and managed is currently a hard bar for somebody to self-host, and maybe new tools with self-hosting in mind are the answer. Unfortunately, not every system is perfect. I have this post here. I'm never going back to Matrix, where Terrence here outlines his issues with Matrix as a decentralized independent messenger. Now, the fact of the matter is, I am heartbroken by this article. I hate the idea of giving up on Matrix, because I think what Matrix could be is beautiful and wonderful. The idea that you have your own self-hosted chat server and you can interact with people in an interoperable way with their other chat servers, kind of like the way XMPP already does, that's a beautiful idea. And being able to do that in a new, modern, refined way is really cool. The challenge is that Matrix is in kind of a difficult spot. I migrated from the reference client Synapse to Dendrite, which was one of the offshoot servers they built, as a way of kind of addressing some of the performance issues of running Synapse. And the problem is that, like, now Dendrite is in maintenance mode, and part of this is because the Matrix Foundation is not getting a ton of support independently. There are not many resources going around to support private options independently, and I think that's a real tragedy. And the problem is, just because we want Matrix to be good, just because we want Matrix to be the answer, is not the same thing as it actually being the answer. And this is why I've regularly pointed out that it's not a good idea to be terribly dogmatic about tools. Because even a tool that was and maybe looked great, you know, at the start, things change. Time moves on. Some projects atrophy, sometimes the momentum that was behind it fades away. And this isn't even me saying that Matrix should be given up on, truthfully. What I would love to see is, I would love to see a wellspring of support for the Matrix Foundation that actually allows them to resolve many of these issues. But I am a little skeptical that we can hold our breath on that. So it is a challenge that we are in an age where we need way more support for digital independence. We need more people to understand the ideas. We need more people willing to put resources into making it a reality. And we need more people willing to learn the skills to work in a fundamentally different way than what big tech corporations are providing. And that is a tall order. But these are the reasons why I emphasize these issues so much. Next up, just a little touch on this whole ChatGPT-induced psychosis idea. I mean, I think it's very troubling that people get so emotionally attached to systems that are not people. This is not a thinking machine out there. It is just words out there. It's like, you know, I myself, you go on social media, perfect example. You read a post somebody made and it makes you angry. The problem with ChatGPT and some of these other chatbot-like tools is that they can have that effect, but on a way higher level, because it looks personal. When somebody out there posts something that makes you angry, you kind of know it's not directed at you, even if you kind of take it personally. But the problem with ChatGPT is it is a one-on-one discussion, and there's so much, you know, information it can pull from, and that's kind of what creates this sophisticated illusion of something that it's not. And so it does kind of scare me that this is a serious mental health problem that many people are facing, and it is definitely downstream of loneliness, mental health issues, and many other problems that are, again, part of broader society. The fact of the matter is, these digital issues are not separate from society's woes. And part of this, on an associated level, is just the fact that, like, giving private information to these tools is something a lot of people do when they reach out to ChatGPT to be their therapist, or whether their workers who are being forced to use these tools have to be careful about how they handle patient data or, you know, various work files. The fact of the matter is, it is not a good idea to put sensitive personal information on these platforms, but that's kind of what it's designed to do. It's designed in a way that it's so convenient for you to just give information and it gives you something back that may actually help you. That's the problem here. And just like, you know, you shouldn't be Googling a bunch of information. Like, this is still a problem with search engines. There's so much more reason for the information that is submitted to these tools to be refined and trained on and used and baked into the systems. And so it is a different dynamic. It really is. The same issues existed before, it's just the stakes are now so much higher. And this is assuming that you'll be able to, you know, keep a distance from these systems. Just because you are careful about what you type around an artificial intelligence, that doesn't necessarily mean you won't be out in public surrounded by people wearing these devices. The fact of the matter is that this digital tyranny is impeding on the physical world. If you are at all in an environment where you don't have control over everyone you're around, this is a real risk. And that means what you say out loud may be, you know, picked up by these systems. And hey, I get it, you know, things are innocuous, but this itself can have catastrophic impacts on people's lives in general. You take all these problems and you kind of just extrapolate them, but more importantly, kind of see them all together. This is a non-trivial problem. So it is important to realize that it's not just what you type into ChatGPT, it is also what devices people around you are using. And I do think it's a good idea to maybe stigmatize using these devices a bit, as long as we have the humility to understand that maybe some people's employers will require them. We're already seeing a very ham-fisted AI-first mindset in many corporations. So it is a very dicey situation. But I think the idea of people, you know, enmeshing themselves in all these devices is definitely something that should be stigmatized a little. Next up, there is this post by the Internet Preservation Society that is talking about fair access to banking. I think it's very important to consider, especially in the US context, but worldwide, the whole digital payments thing. Fundamentally, we have a problem where the internet was supposed to be a thing that would liberate not just people, but also economic ventures. The idea that you could create new businesses that were completely impossible before. A perfect example of this is MMORPGs. There are games like World of Warcraft that people play from all over the world together, and this creates a whole new, you know, economy fundamentally. And that's a positive thing, you know, for economic growth. I'm not saying economic growth is the most important thing, or that World of Warcraft itself is necessarily terribly important. But in this age where we are seeing the digital panopticon gain control over everything, the ability for people what they can and can't pay for is starting to get constrained. And that has real distortion effects on society, because if you can't make money doing something that's legal, relatively benign, or probably even a good thing, if you're trying to be an activist for human rights, but you can't raise money because some corporation out there decided you're not allowed to raise money, this creates a kind of problem where the only people who succeed are the people doing the right things. And that's a serious thing to consider about what that means for the future of many causes, not just the causes, you know, we even may care about. It affects so many other things. And so it's interesting to look at this piece talking about how the bill, the Fair Access to Banking bill, may not be sufficient to resolve these problems. And it's really important to emphasize that these are not really technical issues. We've had digital money for so long that digital money is an old concept. What is a new concept is how the space is being consolidated and how many other viable options straight up are not really considered. We are seeing the consolidation control of the digital financial space itself being treated as a goal for society rather than something that, you know, really we should work against by building better tools. Speaking of checking up on surveillance, I found this really cool tool that I learned about just recently. The EFF has the Atlas of Surveillance. I've zoomed in on Philly just to get an idea of a place, but it'll tell you in a particular area here, how many drones, how many body cam, how many, you know, different things are out there. And I mean, that's a really cool tool. I mean, I really need to learn how to actually display geolocation data this way, because it is such an important way to present information. But there's so much here about understanding what your area is like. And I think when it comes to understanding policy issues generally, this is an important tool to have, because if you want to talk to somebody who, let's say, doesn't know anything about, you know, state surveillance, corporate surveillance, any of that, you need a mechanism to be able to explain to them this is how bad the problem's gotten. And this type of tool, Atlas of Surveillance, is a great way of showing, like, look, this is something that's everywhere now. This is not just something, you know, you see a camera in the street corner and that's it. It's like, no, this is a way bigger problem than people understand, but it's important to at least be aware. And I think this is an excellent example of how providing really concrete visual information is a very valuable way of communicating important problems. Back to the more financial side of digital censorship, the Samurai Wallet developers have pled guilty to unlicensed money transmission, and this is kind of a really big deal. This piece by The Rage is something you'll definitely want to check out, if for no other reason than understanding that this is an open source developer who built a Bitcoin wallet that had privacy features, but he was not like running any, you know, money laundering himself. He was not handling other people's dollar bills. He was not transferring other people's funds. He merely created a privacy tool that had the capability to do things that, well, does fit the definition of what they're trying to go after. And so this is an important issue. issue because it effectively sets the precedent, as I understand it, that privacy tools themselves can put the developers in serious legal trouble. And the problem here is that the process can be the punishment. Even if he gets a relatively decent deal with the guilty plea, the problem here is that it is a precedent, it is a new standard being set, and it creates a real chilling effect. Do you really want to build a new privacy tool if this kind of threat can come after you? It's a seriously scary thing, and it's a trend we don't want to see continue, and ideally it's something we'd like to see stopped. And it's not a simple problem at all. It's international. There's like so many different moving parts here. But I think it's important if we want to understand why there may not be so many great technical solutions to our current day problems, it may at minimum have something to do with the fact that it is now basically illegal to make privacy tools that actually work. And I mean, that's kind of an extreme way to talk about the situation, but that's kind of my takeaway from this problem here. Definitely worth considering what you want to do to support those who are trying to resist in cyberspace. And lastly, to end on a pretty good note, I mean, I love RSS. As I mentioned earlier, I'm building an RSS reader, and I do like this post by Molly White, curate your own newspaper with RSS. The fact of the matter is that the censorship is only getting worse. RSS, despite being quite old, is pretty much the gold standard censorship resistance technology, because you're going to the content directly. You're not asking like a Facebook or a YouTube to decide what you want to see. And I wrote a piece about how like we don't really love RSS enough, because like we could just build new software to make it as convenient as our modern multimedia experiences. And that's why I'm very interested in building my own RSS reader that will solve the kind of things I want to solve. But this is kind of an opportunity where anyone can do whatever they want. There are many great software available already, and really, I think making use of it is kind of a good to itself, because the more people using RSS, the more people are thinking about it, the more interesting tools that can be made. And I actually don't think any of this has to be limited to the way things are now. For instance, one of the things I was thinking about when it came to building features for my RSS reader is I'm like, well, what if we added support to IPFS or torrented media as a way of like really getting around some of these problems that people have with distributing media? I think the possibilities are endless if we really are interested in finding ways to build new solutions that work. And RSS is a great fundamental strategy and pattern when it comes to focusing on protocols rather than platforms. It's a great way to start. And so thank you so much for listening to this summer recap. I know it was a bit of a big one, but if you're still here listening, hey, I really appreciate everything you've been doing to stick around and pay attention to my updates. And I hope you found this valuable, interesting, and I would absolutely love your feedback and thoughts. I mean, if you're interested in supporting the Libra Solutions Network, it would make my life a lot easier lately. And I am excited about the new XMR chat tips option. I hope people find that interesting. But fundamentally, like, feedback means a lot. You know, I'm really trying to get up started. If you have ideas for what would be really great for an RSS reader, that will definitely inform my development moving forward. And so I'm just really excited to be recovering momentum now that, you know, my weight loss journey, I won't say is finished, but it's in a state now that I'm hoping I'll be able to commit more time into making the Libra Solutions Network as great as I would like it to be. And part of this is building software. I am excited for the tools over the next little bit, because I'm starting to like programming again. I'm starting to like doing these things. I'm starting to like, you know, it feels less like work. It feels more like an exploration, and that's all very nice. And I really like being part of these conversations. I love the interviews I've done lately. It was a great time to really learn from other people. And I mean, I'm a little disappointed because like my StreamYard subscription ended, and it's not something I'm in a position to renew, but it's like, I do think having conversations with people is a really important way to learn about these topics, because it's really easy to just get bogged down in our own individual mindsets and perspectives, that I do think we really do need open-minded looks at these things from different perspectives. And so I'm glad that at least my latest guests, they were okay with doing interviews over Mumble, which is a free open source tool I use for voice chatting. And so it was great to record those interviews over Mumble, and it went pretty well. But it's like, yeah, I am in a bit of a pinch. I mean, I'm not the only one. Many people are these days, but it's like, I want you to know I'm doing the best I can to really provide what I can for the Liberal Solutions Network, because it's clear that the digital landscape is a very important front in the broader fight for freedom and accountability these days. And so I really do appreciate everything you have done to even just read and understand what I'm putting out there. You know, that means a great deal. Any attention you've given me is absolutely greatly appreciated. But yeah, feedback and support means the world to me. So thank you so much. I hope you have an excellent one.